The problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Now, once again, here's Mark. Rolled up to my
Chevrolet. Well, welcome back, everybody. Let me see where our headphones are at, and we'll turn up mine anyway. How are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic.
Good, good, good. Tom O'Kane from Action Auto is sitting to my right. Tom's up at Deer Valley and I-17. Tom's been on our list for years and years and years and years and years. And I don't think I've ever had a complaint about you.
And I hope not.
And if we did, you handled it to my satisfaction and the customers, because and I would have remembered it. Nevertheless, Action Auto's I-17 in Deer Valley have a good group of guys up there, and I want to tell you publicly that many times I've sent people to you and got feedback.
Well,
and they none of them had anything bad to say to me. So
well,
I don't
you.
Know if your mother lives in town or your dad.
No, no. It's called communication. It's all we got to do is communicate.
And
if everybody understands what we're up against, it's not an issue.
It isn't an issue. The communication aspect is good, and that brings up a good point. When you call in, tell us the year, make, and model of your car and give us the symptoms. I'm going to tell you a quick story. The quick story is this. A nice lady called me, and she says, you know, I'm a little upset and this and that, and I got this problem with my old Bronco. And so we're talking about that kind of stuff. And I said, well, you know, who did you take it in? She says, I took it into one of your shops. And I said, okay. And she says, and so, you know, I'm kind of unhappy about that. And I said, I can understand that. So what did you tell the shop? And she says, I told them that the wiring harness underneath the hood was getting hot.
So she's diagnosing her car herself.
I said that in a nice way. I said, I don't think it's in your best interest to direct the repair. What else did you tell them? Nothing. I just told them. The problem with the, and it dies. And it doesn't start. It dies and doesn't start. She said, I just told them that. And I told them that harness there is getting hot. And I said, okay, what'd they do? I don't really know, but they charged me money. And I said, okay. I said, I just don't think it's good for you to do the repair like that. I mean, you just diagnosed it, and you told them, well, you're paying them to chase their tail most of the time. I said, I'd like to do that. For $150 an hour, you can tell me what to do for 2 days.
And well, I got a wife like that. She doesn't pay me. She takes it away.
You know, we got 2 hours of this show, and the last thing I want is a bunch of wives calling in saying that we're ragging on them, okay?
All right.
I got in trouble last week. To change the subject real quick, but let me just make me go back to the Bronco. Some lady called me last week, and this is what she said. She said, you said something about that really wads up my panties. And I said, yes. Now, what does that mean to you? I mean, you hear that
well,
from
that's
some...
Well, it's a britches in a bunch.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, britches in a bunch. Yeah. So anyway, my daughter said, you know, what is it that you think? I mean, why does that offend you? She says, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about what people will think about your dad. And she says, well, I mean, do you think that will offend people? And she says, no. She said, they're going to wonder how come your dad's wearing panties. I told Annie, you should have told her your dad doesn't wear any underwear. And that would have really disarmed her. So the Bronco lady, this is what happens. This is a 41-minute phone call. This is the real story. She's driving down the road, and the Bronco dies. And she pulls it off to the side of the road. And when she hits the key, it's true it doesn't start, but it's cranking hard. It's dragging the starter. So instead of, okay, it goes, and it won't start. So she never told him any of that. So we have a dying and stalling problem, and then we've got this dragging starter. But if it cools off for two and a half hours, it starts right up and runs. But it's an 85. We already talked about this off the air.
Yep.
So I say to her, and this is what it's, folks, this exchange of information has to happen. That's what I want you to do if you call in 602-508-0960. We're going to talk about symptoms, and it's a give and take. You say this, I say this. You say this, I say this. You say this, I ask you questions. So I say to her, you know, let's talk. So I say to her, this is what I want you to do. Next time it dies and stalls, you pull off the side of the road. I said, can you open the hood? Of course. Good. Open the hood. Do you know where the coil wire is at? Yes. Keys in your pocket. Pull the coil wire. I want you to twist the boot and disconnect both ends. Put the coil wire in your hand. Go put it on the dashboard. Crank it over. And I want to know if it goes, or if I want to know if it goes, I want to know that. Why?
You want to know if the ignition system's fighting the engine.
That kind of it. in a technical aspect, the ignition system is advancing the timing beyond belief, but once it cools off, then everything's fine, right?
Correct.
So it's dragging the starter. So I give her a new word to use. It's not that it won't start. It's dragging the starter, and it won't catch. How many times do they come in and they say it doesn't start, and you say, well, it doesn't crank or it doesn't run? And we need crank and run in there.
And a lot of people have a problem identifying that.
Yeah.
But they don't know.
But it's up to us.
If the starter's making noise, the engine's perfect. So
you're right about that. You know, it can't be the engine. It's trying to start, or it's cranking over. Is it going rrr, rrr, rrr? You have to make noises. So anyway, I get her situated. I know that if she pulls a coil wire and it starts cranking normally, and if she puts coil wire back on and it doesn't crank normally, then I know that the ignition box. Now, the ignition box also runs what? I mean, it's dying and stalling.
The running.
Yeah. So the run and the start are both responsible for. So I think, well, you got two symptoms. You got dying. We got to figure that one out. But then we got a starter dragging. So I said to her, if it was me, I'd just change out your ignition module. I said, I think it's got a blue grommet on it, and it sits on the driver's side fender, and I would just change that out. And then I'd probably just plug one of my used or my new ones in and then let you drive it for 10. How many days you got to drive it? I can drive it for 3 days, and I'll know if it's fixed. I said, okay, fine. She said, well, I'll bring it right down. I said, no, you're not. You're going to go back to the shop you came from, and you're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. And you're going to—I would appreciate it if you'd give them the—and you're going to explain to them. Or I'm begging you to explain to them what you explained to me.
Have some communication.
Right. It's all about is give and take, give and take, give right. and take. You know who the worst ones are with respect to who comes in and tells us how to repair their car?
I really don't have a problem with people when they tell me what's going on.
Uh-huh.
We back walk them. Right to what's really okay. going on.
Well, how many women come in and tell you how to fix their cars?
Yeah,
and
the
how
women
many...
don't do it. The guys all do that.
That's what I was fishing for.
Yeah.
It's the guys.
Yeah. They want to feel like they're a hero. But, you know, again, we have to communicate. And that's where the failure is. If the communication is not 100%, there's going to be a problem.
And I'm going to tell you that, for me, we accept 50% of that responsibility.
Oh, absolutely.
It's our job to redirect you. It's right. our job to get the information from you.
Got to get those questions.
But there's times it just isn't going to work. This is a week of my life. A guy writes me a letter, an email, and so I call him back because I got a million questions. I have this problem, and on the Internet, the Toyota has a problem with number 6 cylinder and blah, 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 blah. This is a different one. Blah, 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 blah. So what happened? Well, I took it to 3 different places, 2 dealers and an independent shop, and they all said I needed to do this that involved taking the heads off. I said, okay, fine. So what'd you do? He says, I did. $3,900, $3,914 and something. I took the heads off, or I had the heads paid off. And they decarbonized them. They did all this fancy stuff. And there's all kinds of technical service bulletins on the there's all kinds of documents on the Internet and stuff like that. I said, okay, so why are we talking today? I still have the vibration. Okay. Well, you sent me a copy of this, and it says vibration right on it. You have a vibration. Did you ever demonstrate it to them? No. So you didn't say, send someone out here, and I want to show them what I'm talking about. So I said, okay, go out and get in your car. Are you close? He goes, yeah. I said, let's go out and get in your car. Is it going to vibrate? He goes, yeah, it will. I said, okay, start it up. Close your eyes. Is it vibrating? Yes. I said, okay, put your foot on the brake. And I said, shift the car. And he goes, wait a minute, I got to move the phone. I said, okay, well, move it to your left hand. Use your right hand. But put your foot on the brake. I don't want the car going nowhere. Okay, fine. So close your eyes. Is it vibrating? Yeah. Put it in reverse. Is it vibrating? Yeah. Put it in, no. Yeah. Yes and yes. Put it in neutral. It kind of went away. Put it in drive. Now it's back. So in neutral, it goes away. Yeah. Let's do that all again. So we do it 2 or 3 times, and I said, you know, I'm not going to diagnose your car over the phone, but if I were the technician, I think I could duplicate that pretty easy. I think I'd look at the motor mounts, and I think that's what you got.
Right. Just load in the engine a little bit, puts a little pressure on the body.
Right. And you have a grounded engine, so the engine's kind of transferring all of its vibration because the pillow that it sits on is bad. So he says, well, so what do I do if that's a motor mount? And I said, well, the first thing you got to do is have it changed. And once you change it and the problem's solved, then you take that $3,900 bill back to the shop, which it would be mine too. I don't preach out of this side of my mouth for me and this side of my mouth for them. You got to take it back to the shop. You have to say, here's your $3,900 estimate or bill for the vibration. It's described there. And here's the repair that fixed it. So I'm going to give you some time to digest all of this, but I'd like very much for you guys to reconsider this charge.
Sounds fair.
Yeah.
And again, you got to know what you're up against before you start.
Yeah. It was an unfortunate circumstance, but really and truly, again, you and I are talking about communication. It's entirely possible that they're both at fault. 50%, 50%. Did he walk in there and start talking about technical service bulletins and number six cylinder and carbon and all that other crap?
You just don't know.
You don't know. You know, and you're only hearing one side of the story, so I got to pretend, and I think you do too, when we're on the phone, we're pretending that the other side's standing next to us or listening or something like that. You just kind of want to keep a neutral kind of thing. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you got two good guys here, 602-508-0960. And you can ask us anything, but we're begging you. You're making model and miles, and then let's talk about the symptoms. What is it doing? Is it vibrating? Is it dying? Is it missing? Is it pulling left? Is the vibration throughout the car? Is it in the seat of your pants? Is the vibration in the steering wheel? Your air conditioning blows only through the dashboard vents up high into the windshield. Does it do it 100% of the time or only when you throttle up hard? These are some of the things that that this week we did.
Yep.
I'm just kind of going through the work orders in my head. The oil leak, where is it in relationship to the windshield? Is it in front of the windshield or behind the windshield, in the center of the windshield, to the passenger? Now, we have figured out that we can't talk about the right and the left side of the car. Because
it's got to be driver and passenger.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. It takes years to figure that out. Because I told you it was on the right side. And
one
I said,
minute.
Okay, well, let's walk out. So we open up the hood. He goes, it's on the right side. And I said, well, that's the left side when you're sitting in the seat. So, so driver's side, you're right.
We always, when people want to go right and left, we talk about England and what side they drive on.
So. I guess the answer is, I'm sure you use it too, is, let's just go driver's side, passenger side. Let's do that and see what happens. So anyway, 602-508-0960, Tom O'Kane from Action Auto Repair is sitting here next to me, so for the next couple of hours, actually until noon, we'll take your calls, we'll talk to you, and we'll do the very best we can. If you have a garage, then we're going to leave it that way. If you want a suggestion on who might be good in your area, I think we can come up with that as well. If we can't, we'll tell you that. But what we hope to teach you, and especially the ladies that have their husbands tell them what to say and what to do, we're going to teach you to ask him the same questions. What exactly is it doing? When does it do it? Can you show me what it's doing? So when I go there, I can show them what it's doing. And that's kind of an important thing. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Hertz Auto Repair is right down the road from you.
He is.
And you're
fantastic guy. He's a great guy.
And you know, the best part about it is you two guys really get along. And that is so important to me because you're 2 or 3 miles apart. But the bottom line is that doesn't happen very often where two shops don't just hate one another.
Oh, no. I don't think there's anybody out there that I dislike.
Okay.
I mean, we're all in the same world.
And it's nice. But Kurtz Auto is at I-17 in Bell. He was one of the Better Business Bureau Ethics Awards. He works on gas, diesel, import, domestic. He does all kinds of stuff. He'll work on your leaf blower. If you bring your leaf blower by, he is a wizard, especially Eric. Eric is a wizard with leaf blowers and lawnmowers.
What about weed whackers?
And weed whackers, too. Right. Anything gasoline-powered, those guys can just handle. He hates it when I say that.
I think you should take them all down there.
That's a purpose. That's a purpose. But Eric and Jeff, ASE Master Techs, Kurt, ASE Master Techs, both of those guys has pulled rabbits out of their hats so many times on behalf of customers. Nevertheless, I-17 and Bell, if you don't have a garage, then both Tom and I say that you should try Kurt's Auto, or Tom a couple miles north on Deer Valley on the northwest corner and him down at Bell Road on the northeast corner. They're both friends and they're both good shops. Let's go to the phones. Lee, good morning to you. You're up first.
Hi.
Hi.
You have to help me defend you on a statement you made on a program a while back, and the statement was there's no need to put premium gas into an older Mercedes. Everyone tells me that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, and I said, well, listen, I've done it, and I just defending your statement and my decision.
Okay, I can give you a little bit more information. I'm going to tell you, because we've never had this conversation.
No. Nope.
First of all, my wife had a supercharged Jaguar. She had a 6-liter Tahoe. She's had high-performance cars our entire marriage. Not that she wanted it. She'd rather have a minivan. But it's because I wanted it.
Right.
Okay? So we used to play this stupid game because she says, I'm not going to get gas because, you know, you're telling me to put regular in it. It says, clearly says here, premium. So she would take my truck and I would take her car and we'd both fill them up and we wouldn't tell who filled up what. And we could never tell the difference. Never. Second of all, when I was a mobile gas station, they came in one day and they dumped 9,000 gallons of unleaded into my 12,000-gallon tank. But it was a tank waste truck out of California. And I said, is this mobile gas or generic gas? And he goes, it'll be mobile in a minute. This is a straight story. He gets a 5-gallon bucket out of his truck and he dumps two-thirds of that 5-gallon bucket into 9,000 gallons. He goes, now you got mobile. And okay. But here's the answer to your question. In regular gasoline, and this is an exaggeration, but you'll understand. In regular gasoline, one molecule ignites 1,000, and 1,000 ignites 10,000, and then 10,000 does to 100,000, then to 1,000,000. So it's a very quick fire. The explosion is very quick. On premium gas, again, this is an exaggeration. One molecule ignites two ignites four ignites six, and it takes forever for it to burn. So premium gasoline pushes harder on the piston for a longer period of time. But here's the deal. When all your buddies want to argue with you, tell them to bring their car over. You two guys go, or you go fill it up with gas, or, you know, whatever, and tell them they got a 50-50 shot of guessing right. But tell them, I want you to guess, and I'll back your $10 bet up to $50.
Yeah, you would never know the difference.
No.
Personally, you wouldn't.
I had a 454 Suburban. We put a blower on it, and I ran regular gas. I just came back from Las Vegas in a twin-turboed Corvette, and it was halfway empty at Kingman, and I filled it up, put the other half with regular, just because Kingman had the premium gas was $4.25 a gallon, so I thought I'll just save myself some bucks. But that's the issue.
But you feel better when you buy something that's better.
Your car loves you
more. That's why they have Coach and Macy's and... That's it.
Your car, you know, if you put premium oil in it and you change it every 3,000 miles, in spite of the fact the oil will go 10 or 12, if you put premium gas in your car, if you change the spark plugs every 10 miles, your car's going to love you more and it's never going to fail. Is that it, Lee?
Well, yeah, I'm just looking at long range. I'm pleased with it. I just wondered that, I have an 01 Mercedes. Everything is fine. So I've been going on the regular. I can't tell the difference in the driving of it. I'm just looking like long range.
Okay. I'm going to change your question. Tom, how long have you been in business?
It's been over 20-something years.
Okay, because you and I met in 1979, 78, 79. All right. How many motors have you ever seen damaged because somebody used regular instead of premium?
Never.
Okay. And I'm at 189,000 cars since 1993. That's when we put our software in.
Right.
So I've never seen one either. Now, if there's going to be damage, I'm talking to Tom. Is the driver going to know that?
No.
Beforehand? Is the driver going to have any symptoms associated with using regular as opposed to premium?
Well, he won't know the difference.
Okay, he won't know the difference, but what I'm driving at is if it's rattling and pinging like a big dog.
Oh, absolutely.
Then the driver's going to have warning.
But that's not going to be a fuel issue. That's going to be...
Could be timing. Could be too much air. Could be a lean knock. There's a lot of things that
stretch,
could be.
Stretch, timing chains, all kinds of wonderful things, yes.
Okay. So if there's damage, it's usually... what's the word I'm looking for? It's before. It's not on my hard drive right now.
The promulgation?
If there's problem with the engine, the driver had plenty of notice.
Oh, absolutely.
He's going to hear stuff that's going to bring it to his attention as long as the radio isn't up full blast and he doesn't have his hearing aids on, in my case. Yeah. So
good point. I noticed nothing different for the last, 6 months we've been doing it or whatever.
Okay. And I believe, in my heart, that they tell you to put premium in it to create the perception that this car is a special car, it's high performance, and you really need to feed it filet mignon every time you fill it up because this car demands it. And after you paid $80,000 or $150,000 for your BMW or Mercedes or your V8 Audi, they want you to feel like that car's pretty special. So it's just a matter of differences. the dealer and the salesman is going to want you to put premium in it. I'm just telling you, I've never put premium in anything I've owned, and I've never had an damage. And I don't know how many cars you've worked on, but between the two of us, we have well over 50 years of experience, and I've never seen an engine damaged because they ran regular, or have I ever seen an engine damaged with anything that we could attribute to the fact that they ran regular.
No, it's always neglect or air leaks or there's something else that's driving a failed engine.
Okay. You know what's crazy? In the I have the original owner's manual, and in there, they even state that if you should put by action or regular gas in there, what you do is then run that down a little bit, and then just as quick as you can, they word it a little better than that, but fill it up with premium.
Okay, and that's kind of a misnomer too, because you think that if you've got an 88 regular and a 91 premium, and you mix the two together, that you get the middle. And you really don't get the middle. No. You get the volume or something like that. But anyway, Lee, you bring up a good point, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much. It's an unfortunate situation. Because of their, you know, you got the, I'm arguing with the dealer. I'm arguing with the Mercedes guys and the BMWs guys. But my argument is simple. Show me the proof.
Yeah.
Show me where we're at here. Show me. Now, it's true that they can have pre-ignition and wipe out a motor because they got a vacuum leak or they got a plugged catalytic converter. There's so many different things. But when it gets down to it, now I can tell you this. When we come back, I'm going to tell you, and you're not going to believe this, but I had a Honda-powered pressure washer up at the ranch not more than 3 or 4 days ago that was a gasoline engine running on diesel fuel. A gasoline engine running on diesel fuel. And my wife will verify that what I'm telling you is true.
Should have been hard starting.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. We'll be back right after this. Make it all happen. But what's really, really important is they're the only place in Mesa that's been able to pass the muster. So if you live in Mesa, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley. Let's go to the phones. Tom, thank you for holding through the break, by the way. I did notice that. How can I help you?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
I got a couple questions. Number one, I got a 2002 Tahoe. I got about 135,000 miles on it. A lot of miles. I like the car payment, though. And I was out of town for a couple weeks, and I came home, and I saw this oil. You know, this line of oil that was on my driveway, and I'm thinking, "Wow, what happened?" And so I checked the oil, and it was. No, it wasn't low.
Wait a minute. Hold on just a minute. Was it brown or red?
Or brown. It was brown.
Okay, fair enough. And for sure you knew it was oil and it wasn't dirty coolant, right?
Well, it felt oily.
Okay.
Now, it may not be. It may, you know, but it felt, oily. And so... you know, I let it sit. I mean, I started it up. I checked the oil. I did notice when I had parked it for, you know, 6-7 hours, there was it looked like there was a drop of oil underneath the car again. And I'm wondering, is it because it just accumulated over 2 weeks, a little drop here, a little drop there, or what, you know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, what I think you really ought to do is take a Kleenex and pick that spot up, and then rub a little bit on your fingers or get some on your thumb and your index finger, and then go over to the water and put it underneath the water and see if you can rinse that off, or the water beads, because coolant will rinse
right. And
oil won't. So we kind of need to know if it's coolant or oil, but think out loud.
Well, when you pulled into the driveway and you had a drop of oil, is it on an incline? Is it possible? Is your driveway on an incline? Is it puddling up and then running off?
Yeah. It is. I mean, obviously the driveway has slant. You know, it went from, you know, it went middle to the left, it slanted off. And so obviously the driveway has, some kind of incline to
right
it.
Right there.
It's not noticeable, but, you know, it's noticeable to water or fluid, obviously.
Okay.
And it took 2 weeks for it to, you know. Okay.
All right. Well, let us ask some questions.
Go.
Yeah.
You got some investigation to do.
Yeah.
Wait 2 minutes.
Now, let me tell you what I'm thinking. If you're right and it's engine oil, when it sits there, there's no part of the pan except the drain plug that's going to leak because the fluid level is below the rear main seal, it's below the front seal, it's below the gasket. So unless, of course, it's the back of the cam or the oil pressure switch that could be leaking, which is on the top back of the motor on your Tahoe. So it wouldn't be likely to be coming from the pan area because the oil level's lower than where all the leaks are at, except for the drain plug, and that would be the only place. If it's coolant, that's going to be easy to figure out because we're just going to pressure test it.
And it could be power steering.
And it could be dirty power steering. So the next time you see it, the easy thing to do is take a look and put a little bit on, dab it with your finger and put it on the back of a fingernail. Then go put engine oil on your third finger and put a little power steering on your fourth finger and put a little coolant on your fifth finger and on your sixth finger.
Transmission fluid.
And after you have all them on there and you know that the oil's on your bird finger in the middle, then you can compare it because it's not going to hurt you.
No.
1 minute.
And you're what you're doing is you're reflecting light through the oil, and that helps you identify which one that is. But frankly, I don't think the 2 weeks has much to do with it.
No.
I think this was one of those situations that if it would have been a day or two, it would have done that. So you could just park it again, and then we need a sample of that oil. We need you to pick it up with a Kleenex, and then we're going to take the same Kleenex and wipe the dipstick off, and we're going to look at how it looks, and we're going to take the power steering dipstick out and the transmission dipstick. We're going to do all that for you. And then to triangulate it, too. So you're going to say, if you look underneath it, and you put your head at the back of the driver's side front wheel, if you look over here, that's where the leak was at. If you line up the bracket on the running board with your eye back at the front of the wheel, then that's where it's at. No one ever does that, but, right. You know, I want to hug you.
Yeah, is it on the driver's side, passenger side, in front of the window, behind the window?
Yep.
And start isolating.
And if you could even take something like a crayon and put a mark on the hood and say it's between here and the other hood, that just helps us immensely because it just narrows down. 136,000 miles, you got more than just one leak. You may not have anything on the ground, but we're gonna when we look underneath it, we're gonna see more wetness underneath there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I guess I was just confused then. What would cause the coolant or the transmission fluid all of a sudden start to leak? I mean. Or could it be over, you know, when you say you doubt that it was took 2 weeks, something happened.
Well, the answer to your question is pretty easy. We can drip a lot of transmission oil at the shift lever seal, and we can drip transmission oil from the oil pan because sometimes the fluid is above the gasket. We've got a lot of places that can leak. Coolant, when you parked it, it had 14, 15 pounds of pressure, right? And so if you had a leak that had been created in the 24 hours before, then that pressure is going to push that leak out until there is no pressure now. Yeah. When you hold your finger over the top of a straw full of liquid, it's not going to go out the bottom of the straw. So once we evacuate the pressure, then there's going to be a time where it may or may not leak depending on where it's at.
And temperature.
Oh, and temperature has everything to do with it, too. So if it's freezing in the morning like it is up in the mountains, you're less likely to have a fluid leak just because other than coolant, everything else is pretty molassy. It's, you know, got the thickness of molasses. So
could I ask you one more general question?
Sure.
While I have you on the line,
mm-hmm.
Two great minds.
Yeah.
I'm half afraid to take it anywhere. Because I know there's a lot of, you know, I mean, it's a 2002, you know, it's an old car. It runs great. I mean, it serves my needs and purposes. But I know if I take it into a shop, I mean, they're going to find $5,000 worth of stuff.
No. I disagree with you. And this is what you're going to say to, protect yourself. You're going to say, here's the line from the front to the back to the left to the right. I had an oil leak there. Here's a piece of tissue that's got a sample of the oil on it. And then you're going to say, how much is your checkout charge? Tom, I'm at the front counter. How much is your checkout charge?
In most cases, it's going to be nothing.
Okay.
Just to get the car up in the air and take a look. And if we have to start taking things apart, that's a different story, and we'll cover that. And, again, we'll communicate. But the thing you need to realize is it's people. And what you're telling me is you're afraid of people because you don't know what they're going to tell you.
Well, because I'm an ignorant person. I mean, there's so much trust that goes into this thing. I mean, you guys would tell me, that there's an alien inside my
Okay, well,
I wouldn't.
I'm going to cover that. Yeah. I'm going to cover that. After you tell them where it's at, and they give you, now, I'm going to argue with your no charge. It's fine that you no charge, but there's a lot of guys out there that have rack fees.
Well,
okay, $25 rack fee or something. I agree. All right, I'm just going to give him the window. The last thing you're going to do is you're going to look him in the eye, and then you're going to say to them, I don't want to pay for no guessing. What I want is a fix, and I don't want a big menu of everything else is wrong. I want you to focus on the oil leak or whatever the leak is. I want you to identify where it came from. I want you to give an estimate, and because I'm telling you that if we're guessing with your money, then that tells me that when you fix it, there won't be any more oil leak. It won't be in the same spot. It won't be the same color, and we're home free. That's what you say. So we got to take a break. When we come back, that's going to do it. You
right.
just say to them, that counter guy, we're not guessing with my money, buddy. If there's a guess, it's yours. I'm going to pay you with a credit card. How wound up am I right now? I'm going to pay you with a credit card because if you decide you want to charge me anywhere, but he won't know right away because he's going to have to let it sit for a little while to see if there's still a leak. 602-508-0960. Willis, you stay right there because we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm going to do what I promised. We're going to go to Willis first, but on the backside of Willis, both of us talked about this oil leak and being scared of getting ripped off and all the kind of stuff, so we have some comments on that. But Willis, you're up, buddy. What can we do for you?
I have a 2005 Altima, and when I'm going the freeway, the balance is perfect. I go around a gentle curve. The front end starts shaking mildly, go around another curve to the opposite direction, it'll smooth out, and that's continuously. I've had the balance checked on the tires, and they are perfect. So
okay.
Do you
okay.
have any tips?
Well, we want to ask you some questions. You got any questions? Because I got one.
Well, I pretty much got an answer, but
okay. Let me ask him the question, because I don't. So I'm when you go around the corner, does the steering wheel shake left and right when this happens?
No. Well, let's say it's I'm going straight. It's in balance, and then when I go around a gentle curve and straighten out, then there's a mild quiver.
Okay. So, is the quiver felt in the seat of your pants, or is the quiver felt in the steering wheel?
In the steering.
Okay. All right. He's using words we're not used to. Quiver.
Right.
But anyway, go ahead, because I think I got a good idea too.
Well, I'm. In my mind, I'm thinking your CV axles have some wear in them. That's kind of typical for a front-wheel drive, which is what an Altima is. The thing that we would do is, again, you got to get it up in the air. You got to do an inspection. You come up with a conclusion.
How about steering? How about a rack that's loose in its mount? Because it's going to not stress it. It's not on straight ahead. It's not going to stress it, but it's going to stress it on the curve. And he calls it a quiver, but I'm quite sure we're talking about a steering wheel shake.
Yeah. Yeah,
That's true,
and so I agree with you 100%. CV boots number one. How many miles is on the Altima?
140,000.
Okay. Have you ever had front axles rebooted, replaced, anything like that at all?
Negative.
Okay. You are way past due. I don't know very many people that I would assume that if that car was up on a rack, my technician would come in and say, out of four boots, three of them are leaking profusely greased. Let me explain something to you. Each one of the joints is like your wrist. Okay, you with me?
Mm-hmm.
So it swings like 360 degrees. You have two joints on each axle, so you have four joints. We're going to pack that joint with grease, and then we're going to put this rubber boot around it, this accordion-looking thing, and we'll put clamps on both sides. The boot is supposed to contain the grease to lube the joint. The boot is really stressed when you turn left and right because as the tire goes left, the boot stretches out. And as the tire goes right, the boot collapses. So in your particular case, once those boots tear and your wife drives at 100 miles an hour down the freeway, the axle throws all the grease out because the boot's not there to contain it anymore. So the axle now runs with no grease. And people say, I didn't see anything on the ground. Well, no, you're just going to sling grease when you're driving. Sometimes they see it on the ground, sometimes they don't. So a good technician's going to go out and drive it. I think your quiver on the steering wheel means the steering wheel's sawing left and right. It's kind of quivering on you. That's not going to be tire balance.
A shake. Yeah.
A shake, thank you. That's exactly right. It's not going to be a tire balance issue. You should have, I think what you should have done, and it's, I'm not criticizing you, Willis. I think you should have said, come with me. I want to show you what I want you to address. Because really and truly, don't we love it when people do that?
Oh, absolutely.
Just show me. Just show me what you want me to fix. So let me ask you a question. Did you go to a tire shop and have them just rebalance the tires?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I bought the tires at Discount.
Okay. Discount's a good place. And they would have been more than happy to rebalance your tires. Do you have a repair shop that you like or that you've patronized before?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I would think that if the guy's been in business longer than 5 years and you've had good relationship and a relationship with him for some period of time, I would go to him and I would call and say, I'd like to schedule a time where two things happen. Number one, I want to take someone for a ride and show them what I'm talking about. And number two, I'd like to leave the car. And so can we arrange that? Because that's not an unreasonable request. So, yeah, Willis, I think you're going to find out. I think what percentage sure are you?
Oh, I'm up in the 90s, I would think.
And I'm with you.
Yeah.
The only other possibility is a tie rod end or a rack or something like
that.
There
certainly is other issues, but the problematic part of these front-wheel drive cars is right there.
And not only that, the 140,000 miles makes you sit down kind of hard.
Yeah.
And so, but here's the bad news. The bad news is if somebody would have been doing your oil changes professionally, they have a responsibility to bring that kind of stuff to your attention in a nice way. You got three axle boots. Come on over here, Willis. Let's walk out in the shop. Let me show you what it looks like. Look at this Honda next to it. It's got brand new boots on it, or it's got good boots on it. So there's the good one. You got the bad one. I'm going to write you an estimate. I'm going to give it to you at your convenience. You need to bring it in. And I'm going to put two rebuilt axles on it because I'm not going to rebuild these because they're already metal to metal and I don't want this vibration to be there after I pack them with grease and put new boots on them. So I'm going to put two axles, and I think you'll agree with me, it's cheaper to do a complete axle than it is for have us rebuild the two joints.
Absolutely.
So that's what I would do, Willis. Thank you very much. Thank you. That was a great question. We were talking before about the oil leak, and I wanted to tell my listeners that while Tom was concerned about taking it to a shop and having them sell him everything and having a bad experience, I want to defend our industry.
Well, yeah.
Our industry has those people.
Well, it's an unknown. Is, you know, if I was if I needed some medical advice, I have to go to a doctor. You know, people think that doctors know everything all the time 100%. Well, that's why they get second opinions. But it is a good idea for a consumer to get a personal relationship established with a service center and work with them.
Yeah.
If you don't feel comfortable with them, get another one.
So I think it would be fair for us to admit that we have a certain baseline of customers that might be somewhere between, 40 and 60% of our customers that we know,
right,
that know us. They might see us in a bashes and they'll say hi,
right,
and we recognize them as someone who sat in our lobby. It's clear that we're going to do a smidgen better for them than the first-time customer.
Well, our goal is to make sure everybody's happy.
That's true. But if the first-time customer comes in and they tell us how to fix their car, I'm probably not going to correct them. I'm probably going to try to get... I'm not going to try to educate them. But if it's one of my older customers, I'll be able to say, you know what, I work better for the symptoms. Because you're guessing, you know, you went to YouTube and you found out, you're going to guess with somebody's money, you're going to guess with your money on some goofball that you've never met before in your life. You don't even know where he lives. And you're going to fix your car based on his determination or his diagnosis of your car. Now, if he's in Ohio, he has no chance of diagnosing your car in Phoenix.
And what you're talking about is the Google, YouTube, computer people.
Oh, God almighty.
Yeah.
That just drives me crazy.
That's nothing more than opinions that we've always had to deal with forever.
And you're right, but we have to deal with them more.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is we're saying we'll do anything you want, but we're not going to guarantee the success of the repair on your symptom. You can stand there, and I'll put a technician in front of you for $125 an hour, and you can just work his butt off as you have your little phone in your hand, and you can Google the heck out of this problem. And we will chase our tails as long as your credit card's got money. But that's crazy. Why don't you just let us diagnose it? Because we have to guarantee ours where this goofball could very well be. Because if that goofball was as good as he thought he was and he could diagnose a car all the way across the United States, he'd be working for me and making $50,000 to $100,000 a year. He wouldn't be on the Internet.
Right.
But they do have those signs where you can sign up as a technician and ask questions and you get paid $10. So, but hopefully they're asking the right questions.
Right.
All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We still got time for a couple of calls, so if you hop in right now, then we can take care of your call. I love our job, don't you?
It's a great industry.
It's nice to go home at night. I don't know about your shop, but there's certain areas we park done cars, and with certain areas we park cars that maybe we haven't fixed yet. So I go out behind the fence, and I see five or six cars sitting there. I know that's for tomorrow, but when I go out in front of it and I walk out front, I got, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10, 12 cars there that are done. I know they're done because they're usually backed in. And it makes it easier for people to drive away and not knock anything down.
Right.
And because the parking spots are stupidly narrow because that's the way they make them now. But I really like the satisfaction of fixing somebody's car. I like the satisfaction of going home knowing that
accomplishment.
We fixed something based on their symptom, and they're happy, and we know we fixed it. And especially as if two guys have tried and couldn't. But I'm not ready to condemn those two guys because there's a good chance that I got more out of the customer than they did. I got more symptoms than they did. So it's not my job to go teach them. It's just my job to be a little better than them. So your front counter people are key, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Got to be detectives.
It's all about them from a point of view is they're really your front people.
Right.
I kind of got mad at mine the other day because somebody called and asked for an oil change, and they said yes, and they said, how much is the inspection? And it was misunderstood. So then one asked the other how much the inspection is, and the other said, well, we don't know until we get the car in here. So the answer to the customer was we don't know until we get the car in here. The customer, who's a good friend of mine, had my cell phone. So he calls me up and he says, hey, you know, how come you can't give me an estimate? Let's do the conversation again. Okay, I called in for an oil change. I said, how much is the inspection? Are you talking about an inspection of the car in general? Yeah, the inspection you do with an oil change. Oh, it's covered. The fluids, belts, hoses, and tires, all that's covered. So the oil change covers that in any visual stuff. Oh, okay, well, why didn't they say that? They obviously misunderstood you, or they didn't ask you, is this the inspection that's part of the oil change? They should have said it, but what they got from you, now I know, is they thought he wanted an inspection, like a used car inspection, which is $125. So we want you to go bumper to bumper, and we want a list of what it needs today, tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. And we want prices with all that. So we thought that's what it was.
And the other side of it, are we running tests? Were they expecting tests to be run, diagnosis?
Right. Good point.
Right.
Good point.
So,
is this an eyeball inspection, or are we going to be testing stuff? Are we going to be pressurizing your cooling system and stuff like that?
Right.
Are we going to do an oil analysis, and are we going to do a tailpipe emission?
Are
we going to look at the check engine light codes? What are we going to do? You're right.
Right.
But like you said before, communication, communication, communication.
Right.
It's all about that. 602-508-0960. We're going to break in about 40 seconds, and then we've got about 2, 3, 4 minutes till the top of the hour. Then another, 2 minutes till the top of the hour. And then we're going to have another 2 or 3 minutes on the other side. So if you want to call in, now's the time. 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines available. You can ask us car questions. We've already fielded 3, and I think we answered their questions. I don't know if it's to their satisfaction, but it's moving along. But you're welcome. 602-508-0960. Tom O'Kane is sitting here next to me. He owns Action Auto. He's up at I-17 in Devalley, the northwest corner. He's been on our list for a long, long time. He's a good friend of mine. I've known him since the late 1970s, and I've always liked him then, and I always liked him now. So Tom O'Kane, Action Auto, I-17, and Deer Valley.
Wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Tom O'Kane sitting here to my right. How should I say this? A good German boy? I'm just
German.
Teasing. Yeah, I'm
German.
Just teasing. I had to think of, so I couldn't say Catholic because O'Kane could easily be Catholic. So I'm thinking to myself, what can I say?
The greenish.
Okay. All right. I'm just teasing you. Anyway, Tom O'Kane from Action Auto sitting here next to me. And we've got a full board, but I got to do something real quick. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been rebuilding transmissions in the Phoenix area since 1968. Phil is one of the gods of transmission services, transmission repairs, transmission diagnosis. They'll drive your car for free. They've been at 40th Street in Washington forever. So if you've ever gone up and down the street side of Washington, then you've passed Automatic Transmission Exchange called ATE. They're open on Saturday for a half a day. They're a good place to stop by and have somebody, an expert, drive your car. Let's go to the phones. Chris, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark. I have a 99 Dodge Ram half-ton pickup truck.
Okay.
It's a 5.9 liter.
Okay.
And when I drive, try to drive it, it starts up fine. You drive it down the road, and you may get 5 miles. You may go 2 days. And then it'll just die. Shuts off. And in the odometer reading on the digital mileage,
yes,
it says no bus.
Okay. All righty. Well, someone's going to have to track that down. Have you guys done one of those?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so no bus. Tell me quickly.
Well, the bus is the communication port.
Okay.
Through the computer system that's in that truck.
Okay.
And it's time to get in there and start testing the computer.
Let me think of it this way. It's a school bus with wires going in and out of every window. Okay?
Right.
That's exactly what...
Yeah. Right.
And so we have to go in there, and we have to just figure out which circuit's bad. Now, most of the time, it's a bad connection someplace. It could be a bad part. It could have lost this distributor signal. It could have easily lost the distributor. It could have lost a power or ground leg. So you have to go in and you do that. It's not something that you can wiggle as you drive down the road.
Right.
This is going to take work. So I'm going to do it first. I'm going to ask the customer to authorize between 70 and 125 on the front side, but I'm going to warn them that it could go much further. I'm also going to tell them that it's entirely possible that it's going to cost $227 to find it and a buck to fix it, just because it's a bad connection.
And in a lot of times, those situations, the testing is the repair.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
So you just don't know what you're up against until you get in there, but... You know, with the electronics, computer systems, 1999, getting old, you do have a lot of connection issues, a lot of corrosion that could occur.
Right.
You know, how many times have the battery cables been cut and spliced and twisted and wired back together? So that's all part of it. You know, if the alternator charging system is putting out too much trying to accomplish it, likes to blow up modules.
Yep. See, the regulator watches the battery voltage, and if the battery voltage drops down below 12... then it tells the alternator, hey, we got a problem. So the alternator is going to amp up, and if it doesn't see it move off of 12, the alternator might run wild for a while to see if it can charge the battery. Meanwhile, we have a bad battery connection or somewhere else, a power leg somewhere that's not working. And so the alternator just wipes itself out trying to charge a battery that actually it's not connected to. The
right.
Regulator's lying.
Right.
So you're no bus there, and there's nothing that we can punch into the computer that's going to tell us where your problem's at, because it could be one of 20, 30, 40, 50 different places. So you're going to have to find, what part of town do you live in?
Oh, I live up in Surprise.
Okay.
Tom Fletcher?
Yeah, Fletcher. I think that Tom at Thunderbird Auto, which is Thunderbird and 88th Avenue up in Peoria, might be one of your best shops. He's up in your area. He's the only mechanical shop I know. And I think that you would probably stop by and talk to him. And I think that would be good. If you don't already have a shop, I would like to suggest Thunderbird Auto. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
All right, thanks.
You betcha. Sean, you're up next. Sean, how can we help you?
Hey, Mark. I am on a test drive since Friday. Mark, you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I love the show. Hey, I'm on a I've been lucky enough to get a vehicle from the dealership to test drive since Thursday. And I'm going to return it late this afternoon. It's a 2016 Ford 2.7 liter EcoBoost twin turbo. I just wanted your opinion on the truck, and have you seen anything come into your shop? Any kind of consistent problems with this vehicle, or?
Well, I can answer that real quick. Are you going to pull anything with it?
No, not really.
Good. Then you'll really like it. You'll really
okay.
like it. It's a rocket ship. You know, I want to tell you though. I'm going to tell you up front. I'm not a Ford fan. My wife bought a Ford, and we're in divorce proceedings right now. But the fact of the matter is that twin turbo, first of all, they came out with the EcoBoost with one turbo, and now they added a second turbo. That's a monster motor. It's going to go really fast. If you back out of the throttle and keep the RPM as low as you can and don't start shifting that automatic transmission, you're going to get great fuel economy, and you're going to be happy with the power. The problem is that twin turbo, each one of those turbos is probably in and out, parts and labor, because it's probably going to be $1,200. However, if you change your oil based on what your manual says and you don't throttle it to the floor on a grade that's 10 miles long and smoke the turbo, you'll be just fine. If you're going to climb a hill, just let the car work. Don't force it and don't try to make it go faster. If you're going up the hill at 81 miles an hour with 3/4 throttle, it's a bad idea to throttle it all the way to the floor and go from 83 to 84. Back off the throttle till you drop an RPM or a mile per hour, and then hold on to that speed. Okay?
Oh, great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Mark, I've got an 02 Chevy Blazer with 205,000 miles, and I'm getting a grinding noise coming from the left front tire, and I jacked it up, and I grabbed the wheel at the top and the bottom, and it feels like there's a lot of play in there. So I think maybe I have a bad front hub. Would you agree with that?
Go ahead.
I agree with that.
Okay.
The movement is you have to isolate exactly where that movement is.
Okay.
But with the grinding noise and that, you know, certainly you got the brakes and everything else you need to inspect, but I think you're on track with the hub.
Okay.
So the rest of my issue is
Wait a minute. If you can jack up the driver's side, you can certainly jack up the other side. And I would want to know how much plays on the other side. I'd want to know that. Then I'd also want to know from you that this noise you've got on a sweeping right turn at 45 or higher, so like you go through an entrance ramp where you're going to transition from the 17 to the 10 or something like that. So you're going a sweeping right, does the noise change? A sweeping left, does the noise change? Because if it changes, it's the hub. It's one of the bearings in the hub. There's no question about that. But if it doesn't change on a sweeping higher speed left turn or a sweeping higher speed right turn, it may not be the hub, and if it is the hub, it could be both bearings are wiped out.
Right.
And if that's the case, you're going to have a whole lot more play on the driver's side than you're going to have on the passenger side. So that's kind of my answer, our answer.
So the rest, in December of 2014, when I had 175,000 miles, a shop that I frequent charged me $404 for a pair of front hubs.
Okay.
And $263 to remove and replace both and repack and adjust the bearings. So that was 30,000 miles and 3 years ago.
Okay. So, all right. So what we're talking about, hang on, we're talking about this isn't a sealed hub assembly. This is going to be a rotor with back and front bearings because he's talking
If he's packing and greasing.
Then, yeah. I was a little confused. I was thinking he had a sealed hub with inner and outer bearings, but it's not serviceable, so you replace the whole hub. Let me ask you a question. Does the hub include a rotor, or does this hub, does it include the four-wheel drive hub lock? What does the hub mean? And I'm thinking it's the hub lever that locks or unlocks your four-wheel drive. Yes? No?
It's two-wheel drive.
Oh. Okay. Well, that answers
that. On the work order, they said, okay, it's a Prono hub, front bearing and hub assembly, and it was $404 for a pair.
Okay, so they're sealed hubs.
Right, they are sealed hubs. Yeah, they are sealed hubs. So they are that much money. They are for a good quality part.
Right, they do have Chinese parts that are a lot less money.
They do. And the sin, and I'm not suggesting this shop did this, but the sin is that these offshore parts, the cheap ones with no name on the box and the ones that we see out there, it's something that upsets me, and privately it upsets me, that we buy the cheap one and we charge the top dollar price.
Right.
In your case, what you're asking is 30,000 miles in 3 years. You're faced with that. What are you going to do?
What are we dealing with tires? Do we have oversized tires?
No, stock. It's all
everything's stock. So it seems to me that we have a product that didn't hold up.
And yeah, but what is your normal warranty?
We go 336 on everything.
Okay,
we
fine.
Then what the factory came with is what we go with.
Okay, and we don't. We're less. So in my case, if you had been in and out a lot of times, and I know that 30,000 miles, I had hoped it would go better. If I put a TRW hub in there, I'm going to ask them if they're going to help me on this. I'm going to ask my parts store if they're going to help me on this. If they'll provide the part, I can provide the labor. We're going to work together.
Absolutely.
If it's a first-time customer and I didn't, well,
it doesn't matter at that point. If we have a product failure or we have a product failure, right. We take care of it.
We deal with it. So that's the answer is it depends on their warranty. And how you want to find that out is before you take it back, call them up and ask them. They don't know who you are.
So 1 minute.
If you do front-end work on my vehicle, then what kind of warranty do you have? And then get the name of the guy. I talked to Mark, and he was on your front counter, and he said that you have a 336. So I'm underneath that. So can we take a look? It's also possible that he's misdiagnosed it. I mean, he says that there's a shake in it, but until we go to the other side, we really don't know. But that's the answer. The answer, Bobby, is go give him a chance. I would go in and say, would you look at it again and see if your part held up? And then they're going to say yes or no. And then you're going to say, is this anything that you can help me warranty with? Because 30,000 miles, the first one lasted a whole bunch more than that. I had hoped the second one would give me that kind of service. Could you check with your vendor and the maker of the part and see if there's any consideration you can give me? Because if they tell you it's 1 year and 12,000 miles, 1 year and 15,000 miles, you're asking them to reconsider. That's an acceptable thing. All righty, Bob. Aaron and Steve, you guys stay there because you're going to be in the next two callers. We're going to be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Tom O'Kane from Action Auto is sitting to my right. He's at Deer Valley and I-17 Northwest Corner. BMWs, do you like BMWs?
Well, I have an individual there at our shop that loves them.
And that's the real key. I have a Ford guy, and he just, and so you give him all that. But we wait until they've been with us for 2 or 3 years before we start, at least I did, before we start saying,
this is the guy, yeah.
This is the guy, because it takes us that long to develop credibility.
Right.
How long has your guy been with you?
Oh, he's been there a couple, 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eddie came to me, and he said to me, I almost fell asleep during the interview. You were asking me really stupid questions. And I said, that's because you were so advanced. I was unused to that. He'd been with me 28 years. But the first 3 years, it took me to figure out that he really knew what he was talking about. So, I mean, this guy can cite chapter and verse on Fords. He can talk about the difference in all the components on a Mustang between a six-cylinder has this and a V8 has that. And I don't even know any of that. So it's good to have those kinds of guys.
Great.
Anyway, when we talk about guys that are really, really good, S&S Tires is on the west side. They have three locations, Peoria, Sunrise, Surprise, I should say, and Goodyear. They offer a really comprehensive line of tires and many different brands. So you pull in. They'll look at your size. Then you can say to them, I'd like good, better, best. They'll make three estimates for you. They'll tell you how much you have to write your check for before they start. They'll have mounting and balancing and FETs and cores and all the taxes. So you can then look at the three prices and decide what you want. So if you're leasing the car and you're going to turn it in a week, you might want to go with the least expensive. If your wife is, and you love your wife, by the way, if you love your wife and she's going cross country, maybe you get the most expensive. So I don't know, but I can tell you the very few places in town that can match S&S Tire for tire lines and different brands. So there's three locations in the Valley, one more time, West Valley, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear, S&S Tire Auto Service. Aaron, did you say Aaron is still there?
Aaron is next.
Aaron.
I'm here.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I have a 03 Land Rover Discovery with like 96,000 miles on it. And in August, my battery went dead, so I unplugged the battery, and I've had it parking since August. So yesterday I went and bought a battery. It's turning over, but it's not starting. I'm wondering, where should I start?
I say you start it with spark and fuel, because you're
spark.
You got to go to the basics. You got to look for electricity and got to look for fuel to get into the engine. You know, when a car sits for an extended period of time, fuel pumps are little motors that sit down inside the fuel tank. They like to stop working if they're not working.
And I agree 100% with Tom. This is something that us cowboys do. Have you got a can of propane in your garage? You know, there's one of those little torches or something like that?
I don't.
Okay. How about carburetor cleaner, brake cleaner, any of that in a spray can?
Yeah, I got some brake spray.
Take them out. Take that big air hose off the front of the engine. Open up the throttle blades and give it about a 4-second squirt. Then hit the key and see if it starts. If it starts and runs for a second and dies, you got a fuel problem, and you don't have a spark problem. But I want to tell you about us cowboys, okay?
Tom said, and I agree with him, that fuel pump in the tank after 100,000 miles could easily be the problem. I want you to do this. If it starts and runs and dies, then it is a fuel thing. I want you to have somebody turn the key on, and be, in the first 3 seconds, I want you to crawl underneath the car, and I want you to take your fist, and I want you to beat on the bottom of the tank as hard as you can for the first 3 to 5 seconds where the key is on. Not in the start position, but just on. I want you to beat on that tank as if you're trying to punch a hole in it. And then turn the key off and turn it on, count to five. Turn the key off, turn it on, count to five. And it may start. And if it does, then...
That would jolt the fuel pump, right?
Yeah. You're beating on the tank because the fuel pump's in the tank.
Gotcha.
So...
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
But I live in the West Valley. Do you know of a mechanic that's not going to, like, kill me on Land Rover price, that knows what they're doing?
Tom has a comment. Go ahead. I'm going to talk about Land Rover prices.
What I was getting back to is don't start beating on the gas tank until you try the carb spray down the intake.
Right.
Let's try to isolate whether it's a fuel problem or an electrical problem.
I agree with you. I'm sorry. I should have been clear about that.
Yeah.
If you add fuel and if you artificially inseminate the engine with other fuel and it starts, runs, and dies, that we tells us the spark system is good, so we're going to go to a fuel. As far as your Land Rover is concerned, a good friend of mine just gave me a bill the other day for $4,000. I have that bill. They charged him $1,400 worth of labor on the brake job. They replaced all the rotors and all the hubs and all of the calipers and all the pads. And so I bid that blindly, and I can tell you that my estimate on the parts was about the same as the Land Rover. But my estimate was $800 less on the labor. So I beat their estimate by $800 on the labor. I want to make that clear. Listen, on the labor, the parts were pretty close to one another. So I was buying from them, some of the parts from them. I got some brake parts from someplace else too. But our price is pretty well close. There wasn't 10% difference between their total prices and mine. And I think you'll find that at a lot of shops. On as far as the West Side is concerned, I'm going to send you to Larry Harker's on 38th Avenue and Indian School and talk to Bob there and ask him if he wants to take that on. Your Land Rover or Land Ranger or whatever the heck you got, it's a car just like everything else we work on. It's got hydraulic brakes and it's got calipers, and we know how to apply our knowledge to that. So the only problem on your car is going to be two times and maybe three times more money than anything else out there because they're so proud of their doggone parts. So
yeah, that's the problem.
All righty. Well, good luck to you, Aaron. Thank you very much. Steve, you're up next. Steve, how can we help
you? Steve dropped, so the lines are open.
Lines are open. Steve dropped. And Steve, I'm sorry, but if you call back in, we'll give you preference. 602-508-0960. You're welcome to call in. All five lines are busy, and I can hear Gil, which is our engineer. Can you hear him snoring in the background?
Well, when you say Gil, I start thinking about fishing.
Oh, no, I understand that. I understand that. And, you know, we'll talk about that if we don't have a caller, because I don't fish. I've never fished, but you fish your whole day, your whole life. And I want to talk about simple stuff like, what does it mean, 12-pound test? Well, what does it mean when, I mean, how big's the biggest fish you ever caught, lengthwise? How big?
Oh, I would just under 50 inches.
50 inches.
Yeah.
All right,
I shouldn't say that for what I go after.
Okay. What was that?
A muskie.
A muskie. And could you tell if it was a boy or a girl?
Well, absolutely.
Okay, how do you know? I mean, are you looking at their private parts or
what? Their girls seem to be a little bit more heavy.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll leave that alone.
Yes.
We'll leave that alone. Do they both look the same?
Yes, they do.
Okay. And so you grab a muskie, and what kind of test line do you have on a 50-inch muskie?
I run a 60-pound.
And how much does that fish weigh?
Oh, that was probably 20 pounds, 20, 30 pounds.
So you're using a 60-pound test for a 20-pound thing. Why?
They have very sharp teeth.
Okay.
And their gill plates
are
very sharp, like razors.
Okay.
And if you run your line across that, it'll snap real quick.
All right.
So I actually use a wire.
One
it's called
minute.
Spider wire.
Okay. So really, when you get the muskie up close to you, do you, like I see fishing shows where they stick their thumb in the muskie's mouth or the fish's mouth, and then they hook their fingers around and they pick up and they show the, you don't do that with a muskie?
No, we don't do that with them. They're like a freshwater barracuda-looking fish.
Seriously?
Yeah.
50 inches. Do you eat them?
No. No.
You don't eat them?
Nah, you take
a
picture.
Are they terrible?
No, I wouldn't say that. I don't I don't know. You hear reports that some people absolutely love them and some people say they're terrible.
Are they predators?
They are.
They eat everything
else.
They
are the apex predator in the lakes, yeah.
Because if I was 50 inches and weighed 200 pounds and I had I'm envisioning a big snout with a lot of teeth,
yep,
I'd be a predator too. It's either eat or be eaten, one or the other. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. It's in the same way in the automotive industry. Either you eat or you get eaten.
That's right.
So give us a call, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Tom O'Kane from Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner.
Northwest.
And likes BMWs, is very certified, very good in BMWs, but you pretty much take everything from A to Z. Is there cars that you shy from?
Tractors.
Okay, tractors is fair enough.
Yeah.
I want to bug you real quick, though, because I know what women are thinking, because you're catching these big predator fish, and then you're not eating them. So is that really a thing to do?
Well, you get a photograph, you let them go, and you catch them again next year.
Oh, you forgot the let them go part.
Oh yeah, we don't hurt those fish.
You don't hurt them.
No,
but they have teeth after teeth after teeth.
Rows of teeth. Needle sharp teeth.
And so what do you do? Pick him up by his arm?
Well, no, you get them by the gill plate.
Okay. Do you stick your fingers in their gill?
With a glove.
Oh, with a glove.
Yes.
Okay. Is it a leather glove or is it a welding glove?
It's like a neoprene type of a glove.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you catch them and you let them go. And what do they eat?
They eat everybody. they eat the birds. They eat the fish. They eat the turtles. They eat everybody they can eat.
They can do. So they're not good for eating. So they're just...
Oh, I wouldn't say that. It's just...
You don't.
When you have an apex predator, you might as well respect them and get a photograph.
Okay, what's an apex predator?
He's the top of the food chain.
Oh, okay. Are humans considered apex predators?
Not in the water.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, okay. So you need to clarify that. Apex predator, it covers the water.
Covers the water of the lake that we're fishing in.
Okay. Well, I can tell you, I've got a couple of sisters that I could put in that water, and they would be apex predators.
I would like to see the gills on that.
No. I'm telling you, they're meaner than junkyard dogs. They're uglier than junkyard dogs.
Oh.
And they chew up men and spit them out for fun. So a 50-inch muskie that weighs 20 pounds, they'd swim with them, grab a hold of them, put them in a headlock, squeeze their eyes out, and be done with it.
Okay.
I don't really like my two sisters.
You like digging holes.
No, I don't like my sisters. That's the issue. All righty, let's go to the phones. 602-508-0960. Jake, we know you're there. How are you, and how can we help you?
Yeah, I have a 2015 Jeep Patriot.
Okay.
And lately, it's been, when I start the car, it starts revving up to about the 2 for a while. And when I'm driving, it started... giving like a jerk. It doesn't happen all the time, but maybe once a day it'll just kind of like jerk as I'm, you know, driving down the freeway or something. I was wondering if maybe you guys had an idea of what that could be.
How about, is the check engine light coming on?
No lights are coming on. I'm due for an oil change pretty soon, but that's about it.
Okay. We're in the change of season right now, so I'm not real concerned about this idle up issue, because I think, well, I can tell you for sure that the computer looks at the temperature, and the computer will set the idle based on the temperature. So,
and that actually started right as it started to cool down.
Okay.
When it started.
As long as it takes the idle up, which fast warms the engine, and I would say within the first 1 or 2 miles, maybe 3 at the most, you're going to get a normal idle at the next stop sign. And so that's how long it's going to take that motor to warm up. Now, if you had a situation where you said, no, Mark, I drive for 20 minutes and I still have a fast idle, then either the thermostat's stuck wide open or the coolant sensor's bad or something like that.
Intake leaks, who knows?
That's right, intake leaks or something like that. As far as the hiccup that's going on, I want to tell you, without a check engine light, which means the computer hasn't recognized it, I would say to you, if you were my neighbor, I wouldn't say it in front of a whole lot of shop owners, but I would say to you, why don't we wait till it gets worse? Because I think you're going to spend a lot of money chasing this down, and nobody may chase it down. So I think you ought to wait till it gets worse. What do you think?
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering if it might be the transmission kind of slipping or something.
Well, I think you should have somebody maybe take a look at it to isolate and see if it is a transmission issue. Because you don't want that to get worse.
Yeah, it doesn't happen all the time. It's just maybe once a day. If it does, and it'll just happen once, and then it doesn't do it for the rest of the day.
All right, I got a suggestion for you. This is what I want you to do. I want you to take control of the transmission. I want you to manually shift it. So when you come up to a light, I want you to put it in first, and I want you to pop it into second, pop it into third, and pop it into overdrive or whatever the shift prindle says.
Okay.
But if you say, if I avoid going to fourth or fifth gear and this hiccup is gone, then, yeah, we would look at the transmission because that's the difference. But if the hiccup's still there and the fluid's not burned, then we can move on to something else. So that's how I would handle that. All righty. Thank you very much,
okay.
Jake.
Thank you.
You betcha. You betcha. 602-508-0960. When we come back, we're going to change this to a fishing show, I think.
We're going fishing?
Yeah, we're going to talk about, because I don't fish. The only fishing I've ever done is with dynamite. You know, throw it in the pond and they all float to the top. And I was teasing you about
it. That leaves a TNT taste in the fish.
It does. Oh, you don't eat them.
Well, it depends on the fish.
If you don't want them in the pond, then you. I'm just teasing you, of course. But I've fished maybe once or twice in my life, and frankly, I wouldn't. I don't know what crankbait is. I know what a lure is. I know what a hook and bait is. But I don't really. I've just never had time to fish. I've really never had the patience to fish. You know, if I throw it out three or four times and nobody bites, I'm gone. I'm on to something else. But I know you fish your whole life.
Well, it's relaxing.
And that's what I want to talk. We already talked about the biggest fish, so let's talk about, some of the other ones. And which ones do you eat in Wisconsin where you go?
Oh, well, there's just like here, crappies and smallmouth bass and the walleyes.
Okay. All right. So those are the ones you take home. Or you can...
Certainly.
You can turn back in. Okay.
Depends if I got a... person that wants to cook and clean fish.
Oh, okay. So
my wife doesn't go.
So this is a man cave.
Yes, it is. It's remote.
It's a remote. They don't even have cell service, you said.
We're off the grid, pretty much.
Do you have power, electricity?
Yes, we do have electricity.
Okay, all right. So you go there and you fish. And is the water like within sight?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so you hop in your boat and you go out there. Are you with somebody else?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, no.
All right. And so what's plan B if all of a sudden the boat springs a big leak or a big muskie jumps in with you and bites your toes off? What's plan B?
Well, there is no plan B. It's you got to play it as it goes. Okay. There's no plans.
Okay. You don't have a gun in there?
No.
Do these guys jump in? These 50-inch, 20-pound muskies with big teeth or three rows of teeth, do they jump in your boat?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. They don't jump out of the water or anything?
No.
I'm telling you, I don't know nothing about fishing. So you've allayed a few of my fears, but, I'm not gonna be sticking my thumb in anybody's mouth.
You invite them in and treat them nice and send them on their way.
All right. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem and Tom O'Kane here. Tom runs Action Auto. A BMW kind of shop, but does everything.
Oh, no,
Chevrolets, Fords, Acuras,
yep.
Toyotas, Hondas, all that kind of stuff. Nevertheless, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. If you live in that North Deer Valley area, then Tom's been around a long time. If you don't have a shop, I would suggest that you go by for an oil change, kind of introduce yourself, and see how they treat you. Because that's what I tell everybody, including people that want to come to my shop. So it makes a difference, but that's what we do. Air Park Auto Services in North Scottsdale. Nadine's been running Air Park Auto Service for a long time. Nadine and Stacy were married, and they were friends of Mark and Renee, and we all kind of grew up together. But Stacy passed away, but Nadine stayed at Air Park Auto. She's really a strong woman. She knows the difference between right and wrong, and no technician is going to run roughshod over Nadine. So if you're looking for a shop that's owned and operated by a lady, a woman, then certainly Air Park Auto. They're up just south of Bell. They're on Raintree, just east of Hayden Road. And they've been around a very long time, and they've been on my best car repair shops list for a very long time. And they're very capable of trucks and cars and probably motorhomes. I'm sure of motorhomes and a lot of other stuff. So if you're in that area and you don't have a shop, then remember this, Air Park Auto Service on Raintree, just east of Hayden in the northeast area of Scottsdale. Hank, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hey, how you doing? I really appreciate your show. You guys do such a great job.
Thank you. Thank you.
I've learned so much and impressed all my friends with all the knowledge that I've gathered from you all.
It's okay with us. Hey, we learned it from somebody else.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. So I just want to say I work with Action Auto. I've bought many of my vehicles over there. And
well, thank you.
I mean, your team does such a great job. And you talked earlier about the folks at the front desk. And, you know, my wife just loves Joe. She's like, Joe's the greatest. He's the best.
Okay. Now, this is, I want to know if this last, he didn't say his name, and he, and his name is Hank, but he, I'm just wondering, is his name Hank O'Kane? obviously, I'm suggesting that he's your brother, but I'm just joking.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Okay.
So, I mean, I just appreciate everything that Action Auto's done, and, you know, Tom.
We try.
That's a nice call.
Thank you
for taking that time, because we do believe that, I don't know what the percentage is, but there is a double-digit percentages of shops that have their interests in front of their customers. There are certainly some shops out there that have the customer's interest in front of their own financial or otherwise issues.
Yeah.
So we recognize that. So to have somebody like this call in, hey, I'm going to cut that out for you, too. Okay,
yeah.
I'll cut that out of the tape. Well, Hank, thank you very much.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, so, you know, I guess a technical question is that we've been by with my mother-in-law who passed recently and brought her Impala by, and I think we've done the windows on the left side probably four times with the apertures, and then we have another one. I think we're coming by on Monday to drop the car off. So,
yeah.
So I'm just wondering, you know, with those apertures, and I mean, I know they break all the time. Does the OEM or the replacement parts, do they ever kind of make those better? Or?
Well, they try to stay with the original design.
Yeah. But, you know, I want to tell you something. Let me step in front of you on this. I just spent a week in Las Vegas, and I'm going to tell you, Hank, that no part of your car is made by Chevrolet.
Right.
Not a single part. There is no such thing as a manufacturer. I can tell you that I'll give you a Ford because that's the one I really worked on in Las Vegas during the show. Ford has Bendix brakes. It has Goodyear Continental hoses. It has Champ oil filters. It has a Hitachi starter and alternator. It has a mass airflow sensor made by Nip and Denso.
Right.
And Hitachi is certainly not an American company. So the car is assembled in the United States, Canada, or Mexico, but all these parts come together. So I'm going to tell you unequivocally we can buy the same part somewhere else. But on a door regulator, sometimes we're stuck because no aftermarket says that's a 1%er part.
Right.
So the aftermarket guys go, we're not going to build that thing because it's going to be a 1%er. So then we're stuck with the dealer. I'm going to blame it on it. Is your wife listening, Hank?
No, I don't think she is unless she's driving and listening, perhaps.
Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
And when you're talking about window regulators, it's steel cables wrapped around plastic pulleys.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's just a matter of going back in and seeing what happened.
Right.
See if the weld broke, see if a bolt came loose, or if we left a bolt loose, or if the cable broke. But let me tell you about a window motor real quick. I'm up in Payson. I'm having a bunch of cowboy buddies, and we're having lunch. And one of them's complaining because his Ford has a window that won't go down. So I said, okay, fine. No, I'm sorry, it won't go up. It won't go up. He says, you know, driving around, it's really cold. Cried like a baby, you know. You're a little girl. That I say stuff that's meaner than that. So I said, you know, when we get done, I'm going to go out there and fix your car. And if I fix your car and make that window go up, I want you to give me $5. And he says, there's no way you're going to do that. And I said, okay, well, we'll find out. He goes, no, I'll bet you $5 you can't. So if you do, it's $5 to you. And if not, you pay me. I go, fine. His name is Daryl. I'll tell you his name. His name's Daryl Floyd. Okay? So we walk outside. He'll tell the truth. And he's got this big red Ford, and he's on the search and rescue. He's my hero. I really, really respect him. So I open up the driver's door, and I says, go over there, turn the key on, and hold that window button up. And I hit that door on the inside hard as I could, and the window went up. And he goes, how did you know? And I said, well, sometimes the brushes at the back of the motor just need a little bit of jarring. He goes,
right.
Did that fix it? And I go, no, it didn't fix it.
It
just got the window to go up. So I said, give me my $5. And I says, now here's the second part of the deal. Every time you fix somebody's car, you have to collect $5, and it comes to me. So then a month later, we're sitting around, and there's another Daryl. And he goes, you need to ask Daryl Floyd. He fixed somebody's window, and he's got $5 of your money. So he did give me the $5, and he admitted. He says, I look like a hero, you know, but that's worked so many times for me. And I said to my techs, that's the easiest diagnosis thing in the world is just go hit the door panel hard. Of course, you don't want to damage
right.
the car,
right.
but just hammer on the door panel. So anyway, thank you very much, Hank.
Yeah,
you did a good job. I appreciate that. All righty. Let's go to Jay. Jay, good morning. How can I help you?
Yeah. Hi there, Mark. Yeah, I enjoy your stories there. I would I would qualify hitting that door panel with hitting it on the inside rather than the outside. Is that how you do it?
Oh, no, on the inside. The door panel's on the inside. Because if I hit the door on the outside that hard, I would have bent the door and I would have
I had would. I would agree with that. Right. I just thought maybe we should clarify that.
Yeah. Especially on a Ford.
Don't say that. That's going to bring down hell on me. All righty. Go ahead, Jay.
Well, I've got a question on a Kia Sorento 2011 model, and I don't know if this is kind of out of the box for you folks.
No.
The kind of a body-related issue, but the rear seats on the right-hand side, on the passenger side, the rear tumble-forward seat on these have a known real issue with the release button hanging up, and you cannot roll the seat back. You can't put the back rest forward or back, and then you can't also tumble the seat forward to get access to the third row seat.
Okay, is that a mechanical apparatus or an electrical? Okay, it's mechanical. Okay.
Strictly mechanical. It's got a cable going from the release lever on the top of the seat back, and you're simply normally should be able to pull that up to release the seat. It tips forward.
Okay.
It's got a ratcheting kind of a gear mechanism in the pivot point at the bottom of the seat.
Yeah, we understand. We understand. So,
okay.
So sometimes it's very difficult to either raise or lower the seat.
Well, it's impossible when that thing locks up.
Okay.
I've done some research on it, and they have a technical service bulletin on it, but it has not resulted in a recall, unfortunately, because a lot of people are having the same issue.
Okay.
Although they're not all the same problem.
Some of them
have different issues causing the same result.
Okay. The technical service bulletin is very specific. If you have this specific descriptive problem, then we think this will fix your problem. So a technical service bulletin typically doesn't turn into a recall because a recall is usually a safety issue.
Uh-huh.
So it's not likely. Certainly a technical service bulletin should be read. But I can tell you, we've dealt with this. And it's really a matter of when the seat is in the relaxed position down, it's loaded, as you well know. So if you push the button, or if you slide the slide, or if you open up the apparatus, if you were to push down or raise up the seat, it will unlock, but it's loaded. So it's a matter of unloading the latch, because the latch is like a door latch. So I think someone could go in there and adjust that a little better for you, or they could teach you. But what I want you to do is I want one hand on the release, and I want you to either apply pressure downward or upward or forward or backward, and I think you'll find that with a little bit of thought process and a little bit of time, you can figure out that apparatus will work better if you do something with pressure, because it's all mechanical. And so it's just...
Well, you know, we've done that and played with it, and I took the thing apart to the extent of really disassembling the hinge assembly, which is a whole other operation. You got to almost take the seat out to do that. I've taken the covers off and lubed it and tried to track the mechanism to the point where it kind of disappears behind the hinge. And they do work, like you say, sometimes by kind of jiggling the seat a little bit with some tension on the release lever.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that helps, but it comes to a point sometimes that thing will just lock up and nothing you do, it feels like you'll break the cable, you know, it probably would.
All right, so real quick, when that happens, what do you do to alleviate the problem?
Well, I've only been able to twice... what they recommend doing in their TSB is to, like, put a knee in the back of the seat, or in the front of the seat back. You're facing the seat towards the rear. You put a knee up there and both hands on the top of the backrest and just kind of wrestle that thing forward a little bit, flexing it, in other words.
Okay.
And they say that can help to release the cables or the locks. Or something.
All right. I appreciate that you're doing that, and I appreciate that you have the technical service bulletin in front of you, but I haven't changed my mind that I'm quite sure. I mean, we've taken seat cables and tied them in knots to make them tighter,
right.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
So there's those kinds of things. I don't know if I could fix it or anybody else can fix it, but I think what you're going to have to wait for is the technical service bulletin. If it lists new parts, that is your next step. If they say, if you have this problem, then order this cable, this latch assembly, and what they're saying to you is there's a new redesign, and this should take care of that service problem. That's the only choice you got. So you can play with it some more. It sounds like you have the mechanical ability. You can play with it some more, or just simply stay on top of that technical service bulletin and go from there. Got to run. But thank you, Jay. Thank you. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark.
Yes.
I got a 2013 Ford F-150.
Okay.
And when I top the tank off, not every time, but a few times, I get a pinging sound out of it when it's under a little bit of a load.
Okay.
It sounds like you remember the old gasoline ping?
Right, right.
That's exactly what it sounds like. And I've heard everywhere from change the spark plugs out to the knock sensor.
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask you some questions. When you top the tank off, this creates that problem? And if you don't top the tank off, the problem is not there?
I'm going to say no. But it just seems like time I fill my truck up, I fill it up completely.
Okay. All right. I've never heard of that before in my life, and I want to tell you something. If you walked in my front counter and you said that, I wouldn't even know where to start, because pinging would indicate a timing problem or a lean problem.
Lean condition.
So if you're stuffing the tank, then you're probably overcoming the evaporative system. You're actually aspirating more fuel because we're sucking the fumes off the tank, and in reality, you're stuffing the tank, so we're going to get liquid fuel. So that's a rich condition. So the whole dichotomy doesn't work. It's a really strange symptom and problem that you've got, and I can't answer your question. But here's what I do offer you. If you'd send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, I'd like to talk to you more. Give me your cell phone number, give me your phone number, and I'm going to call on my block cell phone number because they make me do that. But I'd like to talk to you about that more. I don't have enough time today. So mark@marksalem.com. You give me a call. Let me tell you real quick about Strictly Diesel. Strictly Diesel is a great place. They're a brand new shop on our list. They've been along for long. They have a Better Business Bureau A-plus rating, and they're staffed by some of the best diesel techs in the business. They're dedicated to providing the best diesel service while getting the job done the first time. At Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, they are diehard diesel service, repair, and parts store. They work on both foreign and domestic like diesels. They're located at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Phoenix, right around the corner from you.
Yes, right there.
And they're open Monday through Friday, but you can go on their website and buy high-performance parts anytime you want. It's Strictly Diesel is the name. Is Strictly Diesel. That's kind of important. Nevertheless, thank you, Tom, from Action Auto, spending your Saturday with me. The rest of you, you can use my email address as well, mark@marksalem.com. Send me a question. I'm going to have some answers, so you need to give me some way to recommunicate with you, and I'd rather talk to you than type. We'll see you next week.